Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Nicely Done podcast. I'm Satya. I'm a writer. I live in Boston and I write about Boston way too often.
Hey everyone, my name is Amrita and I'm also a writer and journalist who started living by herself recently, and literally all I do these days is wash dishes and tidy my rooms. What is this scam?
A special welcome to people who help us get through big days, whether it's an important milestone birthday, wedding day, or a key professional moment. Big days bring up big emotions, and this is a shout out to people who can help us keep calm and carry on.
We have a really cool episode this time, and it's mostly thanks to the really cool guest we're going to have on our show. So let's jump right into it. Satya, what is our episode about?
Our episode is about what you guys are seeing on your Instagram every day. So as all these memes say, every time I refresh Instagram, five people get married. We are firmly in the wedding season. I think we've been for like a few weeks now, at least back in India. And I think till February or so, we are going to be seeing some of our favorite people, people we just know from Instagram or, you know, our closest friends get married. And it's a strange couple of years for a lot of wedding related emotions, because we have all missed out on big, big moments because a lot of us couldn't travel. A lot of people had to scale down their weddings because of guest list considerations, considering the pandemic was still on. Even with vaccination efforts in full swing, I think we haven't been able to go back to how it was pre-pandemic yet in the wedding space. And that has led to some very interesting sort of results. But pandemic aside, even before that, I think there's been a lot of changes happening in how couples are approaching weddings. I think the great Indian wedding concept of, like, we call everyone we know and it's going to be a big community affair, and, you know, parents don't even have time to, like, think about what's happening, has been changing. People are doing smaller weddings. People are sort of keeping it to close friends and family. Maybe it's borrowing from the West. But I think bride and groom are speaking up more and saying, this is how I want it to be. This is my day. And, you know, and that's brought out, I think, a little change to how the weddings are used to happen. I think there's more personality of the bride and groom in the weddings now, in India at least. We actually wanted to talk to a few friends who have had their weddings or are planning their weddings, and kind of like ask them what they did and what their experience was and what they could have done differently. If anyone who's planning a wedding or is going to have one sometime down the lane, who knows, with pandemic and all of that. So maybe you'll all pick up some interesting tips to kind of plan your own wedding one day.
Yeah, that's excellent. I'm so excited to hear from these people. And it's always so good when there are more voices, because I think that that's the general experience. Two of my sisters got married in the last few years. And, you know, so many of our friends get married, have been getting married for the last few years. And you always hear about how overwhelming it is and how sometimes stressful it gets right to the end of the wedding. So I think hearing these stories might give those of you who are planning one or just got out of planning one some sense of support and solidarity. And I'm really looking forward to hearing these stories as well.
I am so excited for this, because when I saw the wedding pictures and I read about the theme, I was so impressed. This is Priyanka Shivram Krishnan talking about her wedding with Nihal Velpanur. So how I know Priyanka is... she's my senior at Dartmouth. She also did the same program, Master of Arts in Liberal Studies. And so when you are coming from a different country, you get introduced to someone in the program who can kind of help answer some questions so that, you know, nobody comes in unprepared. So I sent Priyanka a lot of emails, and she kind of helped me figure out what life at Dartmouth was going to be even before I got on the plane. She was very helpful and very sweet. And she was dating Nihal at Dartmouth. So we all knew, you know, there's this couple, and they are very sweet individuals, always make you feel very warm. But what I really know Priyanka for is her writing. Her thesis was centered around cooking. She has a food Instagram food page called Passive Aggressive Kitchen. It's funny. It's a very cute story, which I think she will tell in her own words.
So I am a lawyer turned storyteller from the sunny city of Madras in South India. I actually came to do my master's, but essentially to run away from a heartache. I mean, literally, I ran to the exact opposite of what Madras was, which is the coldest place I could find. But that's where I met my husband, Nihal. On the second day, I think I was in Hanover. I remember we were in some ethics class and we were all graduates who were lumped together. I'd severely underestimated the late September weather in the tiny town that was ensconced in the upper valley. I was so cold and he lent me his sweater and I knew I was in trouble. And we were actually neighbors in our graduate housing. Him along with a couple of other friends of mine, we would meet up every dinner and finish up our classwork. And to ease the pressure, we would take turns cooking. That's where I discovered my passion for cooking and baking, which took a life of its own in the form of a basis for my thesis, and which is now a food blog called Passive Aggressive Kitchen. But I'm digressing. So Nihal and I often ended up cooking together, and we had similar taste in food, and we worked really well in the kitchen, almost like a dance. Well, almost. When it came to making sambar or rasam, being the Bangalorean that he is, it was only natural for him to make things sweeter. And it was my mission to make sure that things that didn't happen. And I would always threaten him with like a bunch of peppercorns that he hated. As we spent more time, we traveled all over New England looking for covered bridges. And there were plenty, 100 in like Vermont alone. And my gosh, it was so much fun, like looking all over for covered bridges. Come weekend, we would load up the car and we would just drive. We fell in love with New Hampshire. We fell in love with the White Mountains. And he made this 40 degrees Celsius loving girl fall in love with the snow as we chased it all over New Hampshire and Vermont. And I realized that I fell for him on that second day when he lent me his sweater. A couple of years later, I had to go back to India as I had issues with my visa. Nihal moved to Boston to take up his new job. It's so funny, as I remember as I was leaving, we had no doubt in each other's mind that we'd be back together soon. He actually took a small trip back to India after a couple of months to make sure I settled into my new apartment and my job in Bangalore. And over the winter, I tried to apply for a tourist visa to the US and got rejected. And that hit really hard. It was Nihal's first winter in Boston alone. And 3:30 sunsets were getting really depressing. I hated being away so much. So the March next year, because my visa got rejected, he decided to come down to India for a big weekend instead. And this was a big visit because this was also the first time he was going to come and meet my parents for the first time. So we took a train down to Madras and he met my folks in the morning, which went off really well. And his parents actually were coming down in that evening for dinner. I can't remember who was more nervous about the meeting, me or my own parents. My previous romance and the meeting of the parents had left like a very bitter tone for like both of us. But to be quite honest, we were worried about nothing. The night was fabulous. It was just like old friends meeting. His brother flew down from Hyderabad to surprise us all. And we were all cozied up in the living room, laughing our butts off till like 1 a.m. until we suddenly realized, oh shit, we have a train in the early in the morning and back to Bangalore. So as we were all like, you know, getting ready to move, somebody suggested, you know, we should get these kids married. And so we were 2 days later. My family, except my mom, who had to take care of my grandmother, flew down to Bangalore for the day in a tiny ceremony in a beautiful Shivan temple in Bangalore. We got married. My sister bought me a sari that I had worn for her wedding, and we picked out a kurta for Nihal in the same color. We exchanged garlands in front of our loved ones, and that's it. We were married. We got ourselves registered that afternoon. And the next day, Nihal left for Boston. To be quite honest, we would have been really happy with just that and maybe just a party to celebrate. And we actually tried making that case to our parents, but everybody wanted a huge celebration. And to be quite honest, that's where the negotiations for the wedding started.
Can you describe to us how your and Nihal's wedding day was? And please don't hold back on the details because we are all very excited to learn.
So one of the main considerations was that we wanted the wedding to be as small as possible. I learned that my definition of small was 10, and my parents' definition of small was 200. To whittle the list down, it took forever. I think we finally settled at somewhere around 50 from our side and 50 from their side. It also didn't help that Nihal and I were from different places. So the wedding was actually happening in my hometown, Madras, and the reception was in his hometown of Bangalore. So for the wedding, we actually found a tiny, beautiful old Kerala house with like an open patio in the center of the house and columns that surround the patio. This small house helped in cutting down the number of people getting invited as well. There was no traditional wedding seating. We just put divan cushions on the floor, and people sat down surrounding as we sat. Nihal and I sat in the middle. For the Bangalore reception, we found a beautiful spot out of the city, closer to the airport. It was open air and had mini open theater, the one with the stairs, which worked out really well for us because we hired a live band, which actually played curated 80s music, which was so much fun. The second consideration for us, like actually, we didn't want a day-long ceremony where we sit in front of the fire and chant mantras while the rest of our guests get like really bored. In hindsight, actually, considering our atheistic feelings that which have only grown stronger in the last few years thanks to the whole fascist ethnic cleansing that is currently happening in our country, we question a lot of rituals that we actually went through. But at that moment, the best we could do was not to have a Hindu wedding, but an Arya Samaj one, which is usually for interfaith marriages. It's hardly any pomp or circumstance, and more about the spirituality of the ceremony. We had a Purohit who, at the time of the wedding, explained everything that he was chanting in English so that everybody could understand. I really loved that. And there was also this point right before we tied the knot where he asked everybody around us to join us in a chant that creates positivity and energy, which with the whole room chanting, we honestly felt it. It was like goosebumps running through our body. It was that part was amazing. Gosh, there was the obvious stress of planning everything. My dad, who has a million checklists and is a master planner, had made sure that everything worked like clockwork. We ran through the checklist one last time before the celebration started, but everybody knows in a good story you can plan and plan and plan, but there's always a curveball. The evening before the wedding, we had a small cocktail event at the venue, the one with the square open patio in the center. Well, it started pouring. I mean, and here's the thing. Madras had been suffering through such a harsh summer that everybody welcomed the rain. I mean, there was a time towards the end of the night where most of us were actually dancing in the rain. But just like that, the next morning, the sun was out again, and as per usual, the Madras heat had sucked out all the water, and we had our wedding right there in the center, surrounded by all the people that we loved. I think the most amazing part was the realization that I got during a very stressful week of planning. And it suddenly hit me. Like, Nihal and I were already married. Nothing else mattered. Everything else was just a celebration, and something went wrong, it went wrong. Like, nothing we could do, right? And that realization made everything so much easier. And of course, it helped that we had parents who welcomed the idea of a non-traditional wedding. Like, I had to fight a bit with my mom But she finally agreed to me wearing just one sari for the wedding, as opposed to the five or six that South Indian brides usually change into during the course of their wedding. I also refused to buy any new jewelry and I ended up wearing my sister's wedding necklace. So I guess that was my something borrowed. The simplicity of it all reduced the stress on the day of the wedding so that we could just go out and enjoy the company of our friends and family.
When they got married, the first thing I noticed was that they had a zero waste wedding. And I was extremely impressed because I think about sustainability a lot in my life right now. And it's more often with like, oh my God, I'm not doing as much as I could be. But it's very interesting that Indian weddings were originally in many ways very sustainable. And then a lot of things changed and it became like this big grand affairs. And in the name of convenience and cost and all of that, it became less and less sustainable. So now it's actually people who have to go out of their way to kind of make them more sustainable. So what were some of the main considerations while planning a zero waste wedding? And can you also give us some advice about executing this now that in hindsight, maybe something that you feel like you could have done or something that you did that really worked and you would like to share that with people who are looking to also do zero waste events?
But the biggest consideration for me and Nihal, and mainly Nihal's family because of my mother-in-law, was to make sure that we had a sustainable wedding, not just in Bangalore, but also in Madras. So I remember my mom and I were sitting down, going over every step of the wedding we were planning to make sure we got rid of any single use items. So we scoured the markets to find cloth bags to give gifts in. We got earthen pots to store water instead of the water cans. We gave tulsi plants instead of the tambulam of kumkum, turmeric, and betel nuts, which is usually like what they give at the end of a wedding, and it's usually wrapped in plastic. We also had many conferences with my mom-in-law, who's the sustainable expert, to make sure that we covered our bases. The Bangalore functions were a whole nother level. My mom-in-law, Vani Muthi, who's an adored exemplary, who lives an adored exemplary sustainable life with, and she, with the help of SWMRT, which is a solid waste management round table, of which she was one of the founding members, they organized the ultimate sustainable celebration. The decorations were minimal and were mostly reusable cloths. There were no plastic bottles in that function either. No paper napkins. We actually used cloth napkins that she reused. She actually worked with caterers to make sure that there were no plastic, not even the paper that they roll out on the tables. Natural cleaners were used to clean all surfaces and the staff were trained on how to clean effectively. Every scrap of food waste was composted and any leftover food was supposed to be collected by foundation, but the food was just so perfectly planned and it was such a great hit that there were no leftovers. In fact, we didn't send out paper invitations for the Bangalore functions either. We just sent out an email. Nihal and I made an appeal to all those joining us in the celebration not to bring any gifts, boxed gifts or flower bouquets that were wrapped in crazy ton of plastics. And all our guests actually respected the wishes, which was amazing. We included that in the invitation that we sent out. It was a beautiful celebration and we felt good because we celebrated without hurting the environment around us. My mom-in-law actually has a video about it. It's called Zero Waste Celebration. It's on YouTube if you want to like look at more details of his.
Can you also please talk about your relationship with food and how you made food choices at your wedding?
I think the part that Nihal and I were most excited about was the food. From the time that we've gotten together, food has played such a huge part in our relationship, whether it was me trying to seduce him with my apple pies or us reminiscing about food that we've had back home and trying to recreate the same. A large part of Passive Aggressive Kitchen started because I would sit and describe to him about how it felt to be cooking with my grandfather or to be fed by my grandmother, or even the night of baking that I had with my friends on, our first sleepover. He made me realize, or helped me realize, that how much of a food connection that food has with memories and emotion. And these are the stories that I tell in Passive Aggressive Kitchen, along with the recipes of the food that I'm talking about. And that is exactly what we wanted to capture for the wedding as well, our fondest memories. So the Madras cocktail had all of my favorites, like masala peanuts that I used to enjoy by the beach, or banana flour fritters that my mom and I love making together. The wedding food was a more traditional palakkad sadhya, or a 8-course meal. Palakkad being my birth town. The meal was a lot like the village festival sadhyas that I used to have as a child when I would go visiting my grandparents. We even packed food for Nihal's family that they could take on the trains and flights back to Bangalore, in a typical banana leaf newspaper, wrapped up with a twine kind of a thing, as a tribute to the train journeys of Nihal and my childhood that we share a passion for. The Bangalore menu was all Nihal. He picked out a lot of his favorites, like the Mysore style dry gobi or the cauliflower, or the mensankai bhaji, which is like a corn dog but with pepper inside instead of a hot dog, or neer dosa and kurma, which is like light rice flour pancakes along with a vegetable stew, and a bunch of other local Karnataka favorites. His best choice, in my opinion, was actually the dessert, which were slices of cassata ice cream, which he found somebody to supply, which we used to have in our, childhood. All in all, it has been a wonderful experience. We had a personal marriage ceremony that we cherish, a beautiful celebration with everyone we love, and incredible food that we still dream about.
Our next guest for this episode is Richa Karve. Richa is also somebody I met at Dartmouth, but she started her program the same time as I. She was in a different program in Masters of Engineering Management, where a lot of my other friends were also in the program. So I had the opportunity to meet her. Very recently, Richa and I went to Niagara, and I was asking her all these questions about how her wedding is going to be. I thought, a lot of people, because of travel, work and all of that, are now in a position that they have to make all these decisions from a different country, different time zone and all of that. So I thought I would ask her about her unique struggles of putting together a wedding in Mumbai while she is in Denver, Colorado. So here is Richa talking about her experiences.
Hello, this is Richa. Happy to be here. And Amrita, Satya, thank you for thinking of me. I am getting married in Feb 2022 in Mumbai, which is where my fiance and I are from. But currently I am in Colorado and my fiance Himanshu is in Jammu Kashmir. So the Mumbai wedding definitely feels like a destination wedding to us, if not to our families and friends. The wedding is going to have multiple functions, as is the case with any Indian wedding, but on a comparatively smaller scale. And we just want to make it fun and memorable for all guests involved. We hope we get to have a good amount of guests, at least given COVID, but let's see what the situation looks like.
So what were some of the challenges of putting together a wedding in India while you were in America, Richa?
There are a few challenges and blessings involved in planning a wedding from out of state. In our case, time difference is a huge challenge because we have our parents visiting venues or talking to vendors and looking at clothes or jewelry designs and whatnot, and I'm asleep usually whenever that happens. So I have to wake up at odd times or excuse myself from work to be involved in those discussions, and it can be a little tricky to facilitate all of that. So that's definitely one challenge. And another challenge we have felt is that if you're not on ground where things are happening, it's sort of your job to take a step back and be okay with whatever gets decided. So I don't think you can be a very particular bride or groom. You just have to let go, and that's kind of what we have taught ourselves to do. We have picked a few things we are particular about or we care about, and apart from that, it's just whatever our parents feel best, picking our battles as we go, so to say. That's another challenge, and it's just hard. I mean, I have my wedding date and venue fixed, and I haven't even seen the place yet. It's just something I really liked on photos, so we went ahead with it, and I still haven't shopped. I have about 2 months to go for my wedding, and I don't have any idea what I'm going to wear, clothes, design, makeup, nothing. And apparently that's a scary situation for a bride to be in, but I managed to be easy and chilled out in that sense. And I'm going home in a couple of weeks, and I'm just going to look into all of that at that point. Parents and siblings, cousins, friends have been a great help in this process, just trying their best to have us as involved as possible through video calls and other things. And yeah, that's just been of great help to us. It's good in a way that parents are this involved in Indian weddings, because otherwise it would have been impossible for us to plan.
Thank you so much, Richa, for talking to us. I can imagine it must feel sort of very strange that, you know, all these decisions are being made on the ground. And what a lovely point that she made, that, you know, it's your day, but you need to take a step back because you're not there when all these decisions are being made. And for our international audience, the thing is that a lot of these venues get booked months in advance. So you kind of do have to decide and kind of like book it. And if you know the date. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing, guys. This was really eye-opening and very sweet of all of you guys.
That this is, it's just been so good to listen to these stories, because I've just noticed how in the last few years, you know, you talk to people and they always have, if they've been married recently, they always come to you and they're like, but you know what the most interesting thing at the wedding was? This is what happened, or this is what we did. And more, I think people, men and women both, are choosing to do their own thing, like you said in the beginning. And it's just so cool that we have these amazing examples that of these women who've come on our show and are actually saying that, you know, this is our story, and it was a bit different and it was hard. And that's the thing, you need to talk about the hard stuff too on our show, preferably. but it's really cool. Wedding days and like the weeks that precede or follow are generally very stressful. Again, this is all Indian folks know this, but stressful for the bride, the groom, and especially in India. I think even for the recent weddings that I've attended, I've always noticed that it's such a big give and take, like what Richa said in our show. Younger couples or couples usually end up giving in more because they feel like ultimately, okay, let's make our parents happy, or let's make this particular like day mean something to someone else also. But I think that, I don't know, such... And these things are usually like expected, but it's always really empowering to see when the day reflects some part of the vision of the couple or what they represent and stand for.
Yeah.
And, you know, just by small things that are inherently who you are and who your partner is, I think fighting back a little bit with some tradition that is unnecessary or some expense that is a little bit extravagant is still a great beginning.
Yeah. And also for all the people who are feeling the pressure, if you have your wedding coming up and all of that, it's okay. Everyone's really chill. I feel like a lot of people stress out a lot on like one thing doesn't go right, and they just feel it is a day of heightened emotions, right? And you have all these expectations that are not just internal but also external. People expect you to behave a certain way, look your best. People start working out months in advance before their wedding because they want to look their best. And I understand, and I'm sure it is all of that, but a great marriage is what we would want to strive for, and not just a great wedding day. And I think we should all let people feel like it's okay to be human on your wedding day. You are not like some figurine on top of a cake to look perfect and like, unfazed. And it's a high strung day. And no one's looking at you and thinking this could have been different or whatever.
Yeah,
It's chill, guys. It's good
yeah.
vibes only.
Good vibes only, and we really hope that like you get the wedding that you want. Like it's fine if things are not exactly what. This is my message of rebellion. It's my call to rebellion to all Indian kids. Make sure that you get the wedding you want. I mean,
Yeah, the parental pressure especially is it's a bit too much in India, I feel. Because I think you don't want to say no. Somehow it feels like the wedding, everything is about making sure your parents are happy, dude. It's a lot. And which is why I think Indian weddings are so stressful, because the bride and groom have no agency. But like we said in the beginning, things are changing, and we will keep cheering for you guys.
Thank you for everyone who shared their stories. And if you feel like you heard a story that resonated with you, please tell us. If you have heard a similar friend or family member having a great story, we would love to hear and preview it on our show. If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All of our episodes are now streaming on all major podcasting platforms. So find us wherever you get your podcasts and come say hi and give us feedback. We love it when we get our listeners to engage with us. This episode was brought to you by the men and the women who have had and continue to have the strength to ask for what they want, whether it's the decision to marry, bear children, or live their lives on their own. We see you, and your stories and your decisions matter. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.